There's an androgen receptor on nearly every organ in the body. And testosterone, obviously, yes, is the male dominant hormone, but men have estrogen in their bodies too. And, you know, females have testosterone. Actually, they have, generally pre-menopause, they have four times the amount of testosterone than they do estrogen. So you might see enhanced libido there, or you might, you know, sort of notate like better mental clarity, right? So I don't think it's, you know, people should not think, oh, I only need this if I want to go exercise.
Welcome to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast, where we meet the world's top experts to explore the secrets of health, mindset, longevity, and so much more. Are you ready to take charge of your existence and biohack your life? This show is for you. Please keep in mind, we're not dispensing medical advice and are not responsible for any outcomes you may experience from implementing the tactics lying herein. So friends, are you ready to join me? Let's do this. Welcome back to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Oh my goodness, friends, I have been dying to do an episode dedicated to all things testosterone, and what better person to do it with than with Shalin Shah, who I had the pleasure of meeting at Dave Asprey's Biohacking Conference for his FDA-approved oral testosterone therapy pharmaceutical, yes, pharmaceutical, Kysotrex. In this episode, you are going to learn all about testosterone, what it does in the body, what ranges you should be looking for, and whether or not you should engage in hormone replacement therapy when it comes to testosterone. And while Kysotrex is approved for use in males, we do talk about testosterone levels and supplementation in women. Shalin breaks down a lot of the myths and misconceptions out there when it comes to testosterone supplementation, including its history of having a black box warning, concerns about downregulating your natural testosterone production if you go on supplementation, the difference between injections versus the oral form, including the fascinating effects of the oral form with its circadian rhythm and its therapeutic effect, especially when it comes to the pituitary and effects on SHBG. We talk about the potential benefit of combining GLP-1s with testosterone supplementation, and so much more. The show notes for today's episode will be at melanieavalon.com/testosterone. Those show notes will have a full transcript as well as links to everything that we talked about, so definitely check that out. I can't wait to hear what you guys think. Definitely let me know in my Facebook group, IF Biohackers, Intermittent Fasting Plus Real Foods Plus Life. Comment something you learned or something that resonated with you on the pinned post to enter to win something that I love. And then check out my Instagram, find the Friday announcement post, and again, comment there to enter to win something that I love. Hi, friends. Did you know that one of our largest sources of toxic exposure each and every day is through our skincare and makeup? It is so frightening the effects these compounds can have on our health. So we put these products on to help us look better, and yet they actually can be aging us, contributing to health issues, fertility issues, thyroid issues, mood issues, and ready for something potentially even more shocking? A lot of these endocrine disruptors are actually obesogens, meaning they cause your body to gain weight and make it harder to lose weight. That's right, your skincare and makeup may be hindering your weight loss goals. Europe has banned thousands of these compounds, and the US has banned around a dozen. There's even a loophole from the 1960s that allows companies to put whatever they want in their products, and they don't even have to tell you. That's why I am overwhelmingly careful about the skincare and makeup that I use. But here's the thing, it can be hard to find skincare and makeup that is non-toxic and actually works. And then on top of that, that actually has all the products you need. I have found two companies, I am obsessed with their standards and use them every single day of my life and cannot recommend them enough. That's Counter, formerly known as Beauty Counter, and Crunchy. Both of these companies have incredible standards when it comes to what they put in their products. You can truly feel good about using them, and they actually work. For Counter products, go to melanieavalon.com/counter. And for Crunchy products, go to crunchy.com. That's crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon. New Crunchy customers can use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 to get 10% off. You'll also receive something special from me after your first order. I also highly recommend joining both of their loyalty programs. It's completely free to join, and with every purchase, you'll earn credit as well as other fun goodies. For all the latest updates, new products, specials, deals, and fun things for me, because yes, I love giving things away, get on my email list. That's at Melanie. melanieavalon.com/cleanbeauty. You can also get text updates when you text skincare to 877-861-8318. That's skincare to 877-861-8318. So again, to shop with me and get a free gift from me after your first order, go to melanieavalon.com/counter and also crunchy.com/melanieavalon. And new customers use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 at Crunchy to get 10% off site-wide. And again, definitely join their free loyalty programs to earn credit on every order. Hey friends, exciting news. My Avalon X Spirulina is back in stock and now at a reduced price. Plus you get free shipping and my coupon code works on top of that sale price. Spirulina is honestly one of the most nutrient-dense things that you can put in your body in a whole foods, easy to eat form. It's a blue-green algae, which is a complete vegan protein packed with an incredible array of nutrients. We are talking 100% of your daily hard-to-get vitamin K, 625% of vitamin B12, over 1,000% of vitamin A, 86% of chromium, 27% of vitamin B2, plus so much more, including iron, GLA, the powerful antioxidant superoxide dismutase, and even glutathione. In fact, spirulina is so uniquely nutritious that it was actually studied by NASA to support the astronauts. I searched high and low to find the very best spirulina out there. Ours comes from a wonderful, sustainable, clean, environmentally friendly production facility in Hawaii. Not Thailand, Hawaii. And then on top of that, we did our own third-party testing for over 70 pesticides, heavy metals, toxins, all the things. This is the cleanest spirulina out there. And with spirulina, you can simplify your supplement routine and support your nutrition in one easy step. The tablets are super versatile. You can swallow them whole, blend them into smoothies, crush them up, or honestly, just eat them like I do. And again, we were out of stock, but now Avalon X Spirulina is finally back in stock at a reduced price, and my coupon code MelanieAvalon works on top of that too. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to avalonx.us/spirulina and use the coupon code MelanieAvalon to get 10% off our new reduced price plus free shipping. That's avalonx.us/spirulina with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. All right, I think that's all the things. Without further ado, please enjoy this fabulous conversation with Shalin Shah. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the show. I am so incredibly excited about the conversation I'm about to have. It is a long time coming, and it's also on a topic that I know you guys are really, really interested in. I got so many questions about, and we've talked about it in different episodes as never as like the central focus topic. And so it needs its own episode. And we are here to talk all things testosterone. And I have the perfect guest for it. So I met Shalin Shah at Dave Asprey's biohacking conference about a year ago. He was at his booth for his FDA approved oral testosterone treatment called Kyzotrex. And I was so excited to meet him and really fascinated for so many reasons. Number one, testosterone is such, and I'm sure we're going to talk all about it, but such an important hormone. I think people often think about it in terms of men, but it's also very important for women as well. And I know I got a lot of questions from women about it. I feel like there's a lot of misunderstandings out there. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of questions about how to best test and support testosterone levels, and should you supplement, you know, and if so, which route should you go, and all the things. On top of that, I was really intrigued because, like I said, Kyzotrex is an FDA-approved medication, and we were just talking offline before this, but it's an interesting blend of waters, the biohacking supplement world and then the pharmaceutical world. So there's definitely a lot of questions to be talked about there. But yeah, I just have so many questions. Shalin is the CEO of Marius Pharmaceuticals, and he led the development, like I said, of Kyzotrex. So many questions, and thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
And I just realized I didn't ask to actually how to pronounce your name. Is it Shalin or
Shalin?
Shalin. Okay. I said it all wrong. So Shalin. I normally like ask beforehand. Okay. Shalin. So, okay. Yes. So many questions for you. I think Okay, so when did you, and I have more questions for you personally, but just really quickly, when did this approval happen? Had it recently happened when, like a year ago?
So no, we got approved, Kysotrex got approved in July of 2022, which, you know, again, was a long research and development path. That was about 13 years before that approval.
So your personal story, what was your background? So your background was in global investing. Did you personally have a testosterone crisis, or did you, like, what led you into the pharmaceutical world?
So it wasn't, I wouldn't necessarily call it a crisis, but it was certainly an awakening, right? So this was about a decade ago. I did go and, you know, generally into health and wellness. So, you know, we have our up, like a lot of people have our ups and downs, but, you know, generally that is something that I do spend a fair amount of time on. And I went to my doctor, asked for a testosterone test, which was a bit of an uphill battle to begin with, right? You know, I was 30 years old at the time, and he just was, you know, wondering why I wanted this. So I just said, yeah, look, I'm kind of tired. So please, you know, write it so we'll go through insurance. And I came back, you know, my levels came back, and lo and behold, they weren't below what is considered, you know, normal, quote unquote, but they were certainly at the lower end of the normal range. And that raised a lot of questions for me. And, you know, that's when I started digging a lot deeper into testosterone, understanding its role. And this was, again, so it was kind of like a perfect storm of all things, because not too long ago, the FDA, from that time point, the FDA had basically put black boxes on these products and raised alarm bells around cardiovascular risk. And that was actually on the back of a couple faulty studies, which they themselves acknowledged had the faults, but still went ahead and did this anyway. And then the third part that came together at the same time was, you know, I'm based here in Raleigh. There was a drug being developed, an oral testosterone, and it fell on my desk from an investment perspective. So all of those things came together. And again, I started doing a deep dive into testosterone and basically came to the conclusion that if testosterone had the molecule had a different name and was not called testosterone because of its checkered past and its baggage, stigma, et cetera, it would be the most valuable molecule in the world. And that's kind of the point when I dove headfirst in and got into Kysotrex.
Wow, amazing. Yeah, it's wild what a name can do. Like, once things get attached to a name, you can't escape it. Is it similar? You're mentioning the studies and problems with how they were conducted. Is it similar to what happened with the Women's Health Initiative and women going on different types of, like, estrogen?
Yeah, I think the outcome was effectively the same, right? Like, obviously, there's nuance between WHI in the sense of what the data actually was, and then in terms of the products that they used and, you know, synthetic hormones versus natural or bioidenticals. But again, effectively the same thing happened with testosterone, because faulty studies headline was massive, right? New England Journal of Medicine. And they wouldn't retract it, even though, again, these studies had multiple aspects that were shown to be faulty. The headline and the damage was done. So yeah, there are a lot of similarities in terms of what it could do or what it did and how long it's taken to come back from there, right? We're still not fully resolved of what happened, despite the black box warnings, the cardiovascular risk warnings coming off in, they came off in February of 2025. So, you know, again, a decade or so later, but, you know, the education piece, the lift is so heavy. There's so many doctors, if you walked into their offices today, or patients alike, and asked them about cardiovascular risk and testosterone therapy, they'd be like, yeah, testosterone probably does cause heart attacks.
Wow. They were redacted, the warnings, because the studies were faulty?
Studies were faulty, and then they also mandated the industry, the pharmaceutical industry, run the largest randomized placebo-controlled trial in testosterone history. And that was called the Traverse trial. Over 5,000 patients, hundreds of millions of dollars that went into it. And that study did read out in June 2023, also New England Journal of Medicine. And clear as day, you know, the conclusion was testosterone therapy does not cause heart attacks.
Wow. Okay. So if that was 2023, when you released Kysotrex, did it have a black box on it?
It did initially. And then it came off.
Wow. Okay. Did that information make its way to the public or not?
still making its way, honestly, right? Like, it's, again, that's why I feel that we've been, you know, this has been a long journey, but it's really been an education and advocacy journey rather than a product or a marketing journey. We've really just been out there talking, you know, through venues like this, sharing around what, you know, what is testosterone's role and kind of clearing up some of this past.
Yeah. And to that point, so I have so many testosterone questions. I will ask a listener question really quickly, because you just mentioned, like, you know, with the Women's Health Initiative, like the synthetic version of progestins and estrogen and such that they use with testosterone. Nadia said, is there only synthetic testosterone for men and women?
So there's, this is a little more nuanced, but there's different versions of testosterone. So like testosterone cypionate is a very common injection. There's also testosterone enanthate. Testosterone in Kysotrex is called testosterone undecanoate, which is a different chain. So these are all different chains and esters that kind of affect short-acting or long-acting versions effectively. But what happens, what's different about testosterone versus some of the synthetic progestins and whatnot is once, when you take the testosterone different versions, once the body cleaves these different esters, the testosterone is identical to what you see in your body. So they all act in a natural form, if you will. I think actually what drives the most, the natural bits is in how do you mimic physiology is really the dosing schedules, because that's, you want to mimic your natural circadian rhythm. So I think that is actually more important to focus on than sort of, in, at least in testosterone's case, the type of ester that is used in the product. Because even, again, I'll be honest, like, you know, if you think about bioidentical hormones, a lot of people, this has become a pretty big marketing term, right? Bioidentical hormones are also made in a lab, right? Like, everything is synthetically made. Nothing is pulled from nature and put in your body in terms of hormones. So again, what we focus on a lot more is how do we replicate the natural physiology in terms of the ups and downs in circadian rhythm of your body.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll definitely have more questions about all of that dosing and everything. Before that, just to get a foundational picture of testosterone, first of all, a question. So when we're talking about testosterone in general, how much of it equally apply? Like, so, and I guess it depends on a case-by-case basis, but with what you're saying, but in general, when we're talking about testosterone, how much of it equally applies to men and women?
It's equal. I would say it's like 50-50, right? I mean, again, like there's an androgen receptor on nearly every organ in the body. And testosterone, obviously, yes, is the male dominant hormone, but men have estrogen in their bodies too. And, you know, females have testosterone. Actually, they have generally premenopause, they have four times the amount of testosterone than they do estrogen. So, I mean, again, obviously throughout history, testosterone has been associated with masculinity and masculine hormone, et cetera. But no, it's equally important for both a male and female.
Yeah, that's always, I remember when I first learned that, you know, women have much more testosterone than estrogen, which is crazy because we think it's like all the estrogen and all the progesterone. So, okay, as a hormone, so what is its primary role? You just mentioned that there's, you know, receptors everywhere. What is its primary role in the body?
So it actually, again, it has a very diverse role across the body. So, you know, these are mainly, you know, gene transcriptors that are going to go on and turn effectively genes on in different parts of the body, but they play different roles, right? Like whether that is in your brain, your heart, your bones, right? Obviously, it controls libido, it controls muscle, fat metabolism. So there's really no one specific thing or most important thing that you can say that it relates to testosterone, but it truly plays a role across your entire body.
Is it true, you mentioned the male stereotype around it, that it leads to aggression, or like what is it actually from a personality standpoint? Is that testosterone, like the super aggressive human?
No, that's not. I think that's just been a toxic masculinity cultural thing that's been created, right? There are certainly docile men with high testosterone. There are aggressive men with low testosterone. Testosterone does affect mood. I think that is an accurate statement, but I don't think there's no data that draws testosterone levels a linear line with testosterone levels and aggression.
It's interesting. And I'm trying to remember, I listened to a really long conversation, a podcast about it. They were saying that people think testosterone creates aggression, but really it creates, it was something similar that, and not, it wasn't the same thing at all, but it was, that was what led to the idea that people thought it was aggression, but it wasn't aggression.
Honestly, like anecdotally from what we hear from patients, it's almost the opposite because once, you know, under a low testosterone scenario, a male, you know, can often be depressed. That is very common, right? You know, lack of motivation and mood, as I said, right? Versus a man with adequate testosterone may not have the same level of depression, will have more motivation, have the energy, often, you know, reduce, you know, if their brain fog is an issue, then might see a reduction in brain fog. So that man is actually a lot more clear and potentially level-headed than the man who has low testosterone and is facing all of these challenges, right? Mentally, it's just very difficult to be a sort of, let's call it a strong human, if you will, when you're facing challenges like that. So I think adequate testosterone, not too much testosterone in that sense, adequate levels of testosterone, I think could lead to a more balanced person.
Yeah, that completely makes sense. So to that point, the levels. So the conventional ranges when people are testing, first of all, what are those? Second of all, how applicable are they to different people? Like, do people have their own personal level that they feel best at? How do we even determine what an ideal level is in general?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are normal ranges. It's extremely wide. You know, currently the accepted normal range is about 300 nanograms per deciliter to 1,000 nanograms. However, that number is actually trending lower on the lower end to say like normal may be 268 with a lot of reference labs, right? If you go to your Quest where you are, your LabCorp versus mine, yours may be lower, right? Because this is a function of the population that the lab is driving from. But over the last number of decades, that lower end has continued to shift. To go down, right? Because we have a generational decline in testosterone levels. Now, in terms of what is right for you, this is a personal number in that sense. So that's why we advocate a lot for earlier testing. So when you're younger and your numbers are, again, quote unquote, normal, or you feel your best, you should absolutely understand what your testosterone level is. So this way, as you move through life, you understand what your baseline was. And again, if you're on, say, testosterone later, 20 years later, when you're 40 or 50, it's not that you're chasing that number of when you were younger, but at least you understand where I did feel good at and you know, when I'm going through replacement where I might need to tend to closer to that number than my peer or my, you know, my colleague in that sense. So you really do want to test early. At the bare minimum, you know, every man over 40 should be tested on their annual physical because there's, you know, testosterone in a lot of ways is the single best biomarker that you can test for because you're getting an insight into your cardiovascular health, into your inflammatory state, into your glucose metabolism, right? Into your cellular health. So again, if you're going to test anything, you should test that, but that's not happening today.
Okay. So many questions there. The 300 to 1000 nanograms per deciliter, was that for men only?
Correct. That is for men.
Are there ranges for women?
So there aren't as good established ranges for women. And, you know, so it could trend from anywhere from like 30 to 40 nanograms per deciliter up to about 75, 80. It's like a much tighter range. But the problem with that is that they haven't really tied this to whether it's symptoms or outcomes. So that's, it's really not the best, let's call it yardstick. When you're thinking about female health, we know a lot of females when they're on testosterone are probably trending a bit higher. I mean, especially on products like pellets. But yeah, again, I think like that, you know, 75, 80 nanograms per deciliter is often considered a sweet spot. But I think there are a lot of people that feel better at higher levels.
Okay, gotcha. Wow, that's a big difference. And then has there been, because you mentioned that the trending lower, so two questions there. One, and you can choose which direction you want to go first. What do you think are the primary causes of the dropping testosterone levels in general in the population? And then two, Has there been any manipulation of the ranges in order to support pharmaceuticals, or is that less likely since it was a black box warning pharmaceutical for a long time anyways?
So I'll answer the second one first. I think the manipulation, the changes of the ranges have hurt testosterone makers, right? Because it actually makes it that much more difficult for a patient to qualify. So say it was 300, right? Now it's 268. You just cut off more people from getting included because now I might have a 298 patient, right? Now he doesn't qualify for therapy. So I think the lowering of the ranges have made it harder for and ultimately, honestly, like most of testosterone therapy is generic anyway. If you think about generic injections, which dominate the market, gels are, you know, generic, and so are a handful of other products. It's the orals, which are newer, that are branded. But I think what's happened is this demonization of hormones and frankly, keeping people off has been more of the sort of MO, it seems like, versus actually helping patients and getting patients on. If they were, you know, again, you look at, think about a 301 patient. Patient is just above that normal range. So that means everything's fine. Like, these things are not binary, right? Like, just like if you think about A1C or any disease, honestly, if you think about it, disease is not binary. Disease is like progression, and they start much earlier than when they finally manifest. And you want to be thinking about these things way earlier in the spectrum rather than later. So I don't think testosterone is any different. So like, what's caused this generational drop in levels? It's twofold. One is we have a number of things from an environmental perspective that have frankly disrupted our entire hormone systems. And a lot of this you can link to things like microplastics, our food system, right? We have a lot of processed foods, a lot of hormones in the foods themselves, right? That have thrown our bodies off. And that those are things, water, things in our water system. A lot of these things you can't really solve for. They're just too mass scale, too prevalent in our lives that even if you can do a decent job, you're really not going to be avoiding everything. So that's one part of it. And then the second part is a bit on the lifestyle side, right? I mean, we have seen where obesity rates have gone over the last couple decades, and testosterone and obesity are bidirectional. It's not one necessarily causes the other, but they both cause each other. Think about things like sleep too, right? Our sleep cycles have been massively disrupted. We're on devices, screens late at night. A lot of people are doom scrolling. That messes up your circadian rhythms, right? And if you're not getting that sleep that your body really needs at REM and deep sleep, you're not regenerating your hormones appropriately when you're going to bed. So there is a number of lifestyle things, but all in, like, these declines, say even if you went and got healthier and you started exercising every day and you started eating really well and you dropped 10% of your body weight because you were overweight, usually those changes lead to about 50-point changes in testosterone levels. So even if you were just below normal, say you were 250, right, and you got up to 300 through diet and exercise, you're still quite low and, you know, far from optimal. So I think we're just living in a time where supplementation will become much more normal.
Hi, friends. Would you like to have the most epic eating experience? I'm talking eradicate bloating and better absorb your nutrients. If so, you need digestive enzymes. These are one of my most favorite supplements out of everything I take, and I truly cannot imagine my life without them. Digestive enzymes are key to break down your food into usable nutrition and to stop things like bloating, digestive distress, constipation, all the things. That's why I created Avalon X Digest. And you can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at avalonx.us. You can also get a subscription and save 15%, which you can pause or cancel at any time. Friends, I worked so hard to create the perfect blend of enzymes for Avalon X Digest. It's a full-spectrum, plant-based enzyme blend with proteases to help you break down protein, amylase for carbs, lipase for fats, cellulase for fiber, and so much more. In fact, there are 13 different types of enzymes in this blend. I cannot tell you how many people have told me that when they take Avalon X Digest, they experience no digestive distress with meals. These are truly game changers. And for any of you guys looking to up your protein intake, Avalon X Digest will help you actually break down and assimilate your protein so you get more protein from your meals. I wanted to create the highest potency enzymes so that you get all of these benefits when you eat with no problematic fillers or ingredients. Avalon X Digest is also tested multiple times for purity and potency, comes in glass bottles, and is truly the best enzymes on the market. And again, you can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at avalonx.us.
That's also pretty ironic because now I'm thinking, I don't know how often this actually realistically happens, but I'm thinking of a situation where if there was a person who was borderline low and would benefit from supplementation and then made like a little bit of a lifestyle change and then now, you know, that bumps them up. So now they're no longer qualifying as being low, but they are still low. Like they could have like shot themselves in the foot by making beneficial changes.
Correct. Just getting above that normal range slightly. And yeah, you're right. Disqualifying them from therapy and their insurance is not covering it. And you know, sort of cascades from there. You know, that's why, again, the norm, you know, you talk to a lot of urologists. Urologists are one of the primary prescribers of testosterone, you know, in the country today. Most of the data that they'll cite actually says anywhere up to 450 nanograms per deciliter could show some therapy benefit. Above that, it's less likely, but almost up to 450 nanograms per deciliter could you see therapeutic benefit from testosterone.
Just so I get an idea, so people who are really like pumped up on steroids and testosterone, like the stereotypical
gym bro.
Gym, yeah. Like, what are those levels?
Those, I mean, if you're talking about real, like, steroid abuse and bodybuilder, you're probably, you know, three times that upper normal limit. You could probably be anywhere between 2,500 nanograms per deciliter and, like, 4,000. So you're way up there. No normal guy replacing their testosterone is going to be there.
Okay. Are you going to the Enhance Games?
Fair question. Haven't really figured out our position there. Just given like a lot of this, the historic stigma around this, what best solves for the future of men? Still debating.
Yeah, they invited me to come and I was like, whoa, I need to, I'm going. I'm just really intrigued and curious. So for listeners, and I think by the time this comes out, they will have already happened, but essentially they are allowing performance enhancing drugs in athletic competition, trying to break, you know, various world records. And they have a lot of former record holders and such and Olympians. So should be interesting. I've never even been, like, this is not my sphere. I've never been to anything like this, even on the legal side of things. So yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, again, it is an interesting experiment, right? I think what's important for like general listeners to know too, right? And this is what caused, like, testosterone is a controlled substance today, right? And this is because Congress did it in 1990 as a result of the Olympics, doping in the Olympics. It was actually Ben Johnson, a Canadian sprinter, that was caught doping. And that caused all this outrage. And then Congress scheduled testosterone. It's the only hormone to be scheduled. So estrogen is not a scheduled hormone, progesterone, insulin, obviously actually even HGH is not even a controlled substance, which is kind of wild when you think about it. But what's also important to know too, because like, again, testosterone gets wrapped up in this, but like performance enhancing drugs extend so far beyond testosterone. Like nobody is getting jacked by taking testosterone and sitting on their couch, right? Like it's a totally different sort of set of drugs that people are on in order to, you know, achieve these ridiculous sporting accomplishments or physiques, that I think it's important to like understand that like testosterone is the most basic, like innocent of anything in that world.
Actually, to that point, because that was a question I had, because you just gave the picture of somebody, you know, sitting on the couch taking testosterone. So if you do take it and you don't add any additional physical activity, you have a sedentary lifestyle, what are the effects of it?
So, well, you can still see positive effects, right? Because again, it could be working on your brain. So you might see enhanced libido there, or you might, you know, sort of notate like better mental clarity, right? So I don't think it's, you know, people should not think, oh, I only need this if I want to go exercise, right? And there also, effects that you won't necessarily feel, in the sense that you would potentially lower your inflammation that's going on in your body, right? Testosterone is anti-inflammatory. There would be some, you know, anabolic activity that's going on. So you could see some more muscle synthesis happening, even if you're not stimulating it the way that you should be through training. So, you know, that said, there are a lot of positive things that can occur while being, let's just call it, a regular person on testosterone.
So, okay, and that completely makes sense, especially what you were saying at the beginning with, you know, all the different receptors for it. For the effects that it does have on muscle, for example, and fat loss, does that require additional stimulus, or can it still, like, would people put on put on muscle without adding additional, like, weightlifting?
Yeah, no, good question. So there's two points I would make there, right? One is, I mean, testosterone is used in certain, like, hospital conditions. So to preserve lean mass, right? Say you have a bedridden patient. There has been data that's shown that lean mass is preserved via testosterone in a, like, fairly inactive patient, right? So there is definitely that benefit there. I think there will be anabolic activity, right? And that's why, actually, interestingly enough, what we're going to be studying is, as we talk about lean mass, we're going to be studying Kizotrex and GLP-1s, because GLP-1s, you know, obviously, yes, they're leading to weight loss, but up to 40% of this is lean mass. So that's a big, you know, one of the biggest issues with GLP-1s that people are trying to solve for is this loss of muscle. And effectively, we're trading obesity for sarcopenia. And so, yeah, we are going to study this as well. I mean, anecdotally, we have good data that shows this preservation, but we're going to do it in a proper clinical trial.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. That's exciting. Have they studied it at all, do you know, for, like, the astronauts?
Not that I know of, but I think the same premise exists, right? Like, if you're not using your muscles and you're in some sort of, you know, sedentary or floating position, if you will, yeah, there is a case to definitely be on an anabolic like testosterone.
Okay. And so, some questions I am dying to ask and very curious about. First of all, we've talked about, you know, the ranges and testing and then potentially supplementing. Is there a window of opportunity for when you should start on this? Kind of like with, I know for women and hormone replacement therapy, there's like a certain window of opportunity where they say that's the early window that you need to start on to see the best effects.
Right. So yeah, so there has been good data that shows on the female side, right? Yeah, HRT should be started within 10 years of menopause. That doesn't exist the same on the male side. What I would say is this: if you know you are low testosterone or testosterone deficient, you really have no benefit in waiting, right? Would you get the same benefits or same changes could you experience if you started 5 years later, 7 years later, 10 years later? Sure. But it's not just what I would advocate for is not, it's not just the symptomatic differences that you may feel, but there are the underlying bits that you want to be conscious of. So again, I talk about inflammation, or if you talk about insulin sensitivity, right? Or even fasting insulin, right? Fasting insulin can be reduced on testosterone. So we know that's a number that we want to get down, not talked about nearly as much as it should be today, but that is a number most people are going to need to get down. So if I have to think about my, you know, timeline of life, I'd rather make that intervention earlier, have better numbers, so I could likely have a better lifespan.
Okay, so you just hit on two big topics. So one, the lifespan. A person who's optimized on their testosterone levels, quote, naturally versus supplementing for it in whatever form it may be, do you think those lead to the same effects on lifespan and then also health span? Like, and are those two correlated?
So it's hard to say exactly. If a guy has natural T levels, would he have a better lifespan than the guy that has to supplement his T levels, right? All things equal, they should be the same, right? As long as that low T supplementer, right, doesn't have other issues, that are making him worse. And same with the other, like the other patient, right? The guy that might have normal T, who knows? He might have plaque buildup in his arteries because of, you know, a poor diet, but somehow he's maintained normal testosterone levels, right? Like ideally those two should be the same sort of outcome generally. But I think what's easier to kind of look at is that, and there's tremendous data on this. There was a massive study on VA patients. I think it was like 300 odd thousand, if not more, patients out of the VA that basically just simply said, look, low testosterone leads to higher all-cause mortality, right? So if you take that statement at face value, then if you have low T, you are likely to die earlier.
Wow. Yeah. And I guess in the example of somebody who's on hormones versus not, like you said, the reason that they're on it, if it's like a environmental lifestyle factor that's creating the low hormones, then just supplementing the hormones is not going to remove that other lifestyle factor that could be, you know, having negative health effects as well.
Exactly. I mean, like you want to, I mean, we always advocate it for, I always advocate for like, you do want to do the fundamentals, right? Like diet, sleep, stress, exercise. Those are non-negotiables. You should be doing them no matter what. But, you know, if you're doing all that, there's nothing wrong with then supplementing if you need to.
And to this point, so here's a huge question I have. So once you go, and I guess we can talk about the different routes. So Kysotrex, like we said, is an oral testosterone treatment. So we can definitely, I would love to hear about the different forms and the, you know, cost benefits of them. Once you go on, does your body stop naturally producing testosterone? And can that be permanent? Like what are the, like, is this like you're committing?
No, it's a good question. And it does come up. So, and like, again, I just want to preface, right? Kysotrex is indicated for men with low or no testosterone due to certain medical conditions. That is our indication, right? So that's just, you know, fair disclaimer for that. But in terms of, do you stop producing it and then do you have to stay on for life? One, it depends. So in this does vary by modality. So often when people are taking injections, because you're taking them for a 1 week or 2 week basis, you are getting super physiologic levels, meaning they're quite high for the first half of that treatment regimen. And then they are subtherapeutic for the second half, right? Because it goes up and then obviously comes crashing down, and then you stay down there till your next injection. Because of that super physiologic high, the body often does shut down its production. And you generally kind of view this through the lens of the pituitary signaling, LH and FSH. So most often, again, when guys are on injections, those levels are zero, undetectable. Now, you switch the modality and you look at short-acting oral testosterone. And what's interesting is what we've seen in the data is that LH and FSH, while they do come down, they stay actually in the normal range. So the pituitary is still active. And what's interesting is because, you know, again, it goes back to that daily physiologic, you know, dosing that I mentioned. So at the end of the day, your body is really flushing out that testosterone. Basically, it's used what it's had to for the day, and you're back to baseline at the end of the day, rather than maintaining some sort of super physiologic level. So at the end of the day, if you have no external testosterone in your body, then your brain is saying when it's time to make hormones, saying, hey guys, we got to get back to work, right? So it signals to the testes to make testosterone. So that's why I think it's really interesting with short-acting oral that the LH and FSH stay on to a certain degree. Is it down or, you know, a little bit? Yeah. But again, still in the normal range. And then to your question around like, do you stay on this forever? It's funny when I get asked this question, right? I kind of look at it from the other lens. Like you can get off, but then you're going to feel how you used to feel. And is that what you want, right? If you got on for a certain reason, because you were symptomatic or because you wanted to make sure you're optimal for better health or whatever it may be, like, are you more concerned with returning to that state? Are you more concerned with having to stay, you know, quote unquote, stay on forever? And that's really the way I frame it to guys. You can get off. That's totally fine. But you're going to feel like, likely feel like shit again. And then you're going to want to get back on.
Wow. Okay. I'm really fascinated by the LSH, FSH, pituitary response to the different dosing. The different methods of dosing. So when they inject it, that big bolus dose, what's the half-life of it? Where does it live? Does it just like hang out for a little bit and like slowly get used up?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's like, that's why if you're measuring a guy kind of even like a few days post injection, right? Those levels could still be super physiologic.
And where is it living?
It's in your serum. It's in your blood.
It's just, okay. Hey friends, I am about to tell you how to get 10% off the ideal coffee when it comes to supporting your health. So if you guys know me, you know I am obsessed with optimizing basically everything I consume, and that especially relates to coffee. Did you know that coffee is one of the most powerful sources of antioxidants in the modern diet? And yet, not all coffee is created equal. Between sourcing, farming practices, roasting, and contaminants, there can be a huge difference in the health impact of the coffee that you drink. That is exactly why I created Glow Coffee. Glow Coffee is a premium, specialty-grade Arabica coffee sourced from sustainable women-led farms in Colombia. It's organically grown, and we third-party test it meticulously, like every single lot, for purity. And what makes Glow especially exciting from a biohacking perspective is that we specifically made it to be rich in chlorogenic acid, or CGA. That's one of coffee's primary, most potent antioxidant compounds that has been studied for its role in metabolic health, inflammation, oxidative stress, and so much more. The elevation levels of the beans, how they're grown, and how they're roasted all affect CGA levels. So we searched high and low to find the perfect beans naturally high in CGA and tested them to confirm that, and then we roast those beans to preserve the CGA content. And then test after that as well. Coffee is already one of the potentially biggest contributors of antioxidants in the human diet, so I designed Glow Coffee to maximize those benefits while keeping it incredibly clean and high quality. And this coffee is so clean. It's grown organically, of course, but then we go even farther than that. We third-party test the beans for almost 100 toxic compounds, including pesticides, heavy metals, and mold. Oh, and perhaps the best part is it is absolutely delicious. We're talking smooth, low bitterness. It's honestly the exact coffee I personally want to drink every single day of my life. It's so bright, smooth, and delicious that it's also perfect black for fasting. No added sweeteners or cream needed. You can also splash it on your face for an antioxidant-rich toner. I do that every single day. After the sauna, after the shower, all the things. I created Glow Coffee because it's really about upgrading one of our most common daily habits into something that truly supports your health and performance. You can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at glowcoffeeco.com. That's 10% off Glow Coffee with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at glowcoffeeco.com. Are you ready to glow inside and out? Fuel your day, illuminate your way. That's glowcoffeeco.com. It's interesting. It's kind of similar because like I'm on thyroid medication for hyperthyroidism. And so there's always this ongoing debate about the TSH and whether or not the TSH should be like suppressed if you're on supplemental T3 as well. It's not the same thing, but that's why I'm so fascinated by it, because I feel like I'm always fighting my doctors with this because of the communication between the two and them trying to like reduce my hormones because my TSH is suppressed. But I'm like, it's suppressed because I'm on the hormones. So don't reduce the hormones.
Correct. Yeah. And it's, you know, so it has like the effect here is like, and which is why you see this with long-term, like, let's call it steroid use, like, or whatnot. Like, let's call it abuse, right? Like, the androgen receptors get blunted. So that's why you often see guys increase their doses over time, because the receptors are not working as well as they were originally, right? So an even more reason why you want, like, again, you want the most physiologic dose and like match that circadian rhythm so you don't have to oversaturate your receptors.
This is okay. And so when you take it orally, does it go through the liver and get processed?
No. So what's unique here is that's old oral testosterone, methyl testosterone did go through the liver. And that's why it was effectively thrown out, right? And that's why a lot of doctors, if you talk to them today, just because that's what they are aware of, like they're like, no, oral testosterone is bad. What we've created is lymphatically absorbed oral testosterone. So this actually gets absorbed in your small intestine and it bypasses the liver.
So does it, for all intents and purposes, end up at the same pathway and location as injections?
I mean, yeah, it'll be in your blood, right? Eventually it'll make it in your bloodstream, but it's just, it doesn't hit the liver.
Men take it once a day?
So it's actually taken twice a day. It's BID.
Okay. And then the dosing is just based on, what is the dosing based on? Like, who picks what level you're aiming for, especially with such a wide range?
Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, individual each patient. Well, we started at, well, I think it's better to mention it this way. So in our phase 3 trial, most of the patients ended up on either 300 milligrams BID or 400 milligrams BID. Those were the largest cohorts of patients. Since then, what we've seen is, and we have data that's been presented on this, is a lot of clinicians, knowing that this is where they end up, start at those starting doses because it saves a titration potentially. You know, again, guys are a little fickle. Often they want to see results fast. So what a number of clinicians have seen is, okay, if this is where they're going to end up, let's just start them there. And that seems to work out pretty well.
And to that point, how long does it take to get there? Like, when do you retest once you start?
So you can recheck levels within 7 days if you want to see your, if you want to see your levels, right? It depends on the clinician and their protocol, right? Where they're going to actually check at 30 days. Often a lot of clinicians don't see their patients for 3 months. So it might be 3 months till they see them. What's interesting around our data is that from a hematocrit perspective, this is your red blood cells, only 2% of patients, sub 2% of patients in our phase 3 trials had hematocrit elevations above 54%, which is sort of the bar, right? If you go above 54, either people are donating blood or they're down titrating their dose. And we only had sub 2% of patients do that versus if you look at published data around injections, those papers will cite up to 66% of patients would have hematocrit levels that go above 54%.
Do you think this will be available for women in the future?
We are actively working on a female development program. I mean, it is a company goal. It is a personal goal that we bring this. Like, we want an FDA-approved option for females. I mentioned I got into this about a decade ago. Even back then, some of the KOL conversations that I had were around female. So it couldn't be a better time for it. We are completely dedicated to it. And I think there is, you know, with the regulatory support from this administration, like there's a good chance we can bring this out for females.
Is there any FDA approved testosterone supplementation for females?
Zero FDA approved options for females. And there's no shortage of data. Like, there's plenty of data on why this is important for females.
Wow. Okay. And to that point, because I was really curious, like the process of getting it approved, like just in general, was this your first, because you said that the opportunity, you know, came across the table for you. Was this your first foray into a medical thing?
Pharmaceutical. Yeah. So it was. And I honestly, that's why I think Marius has done things so differently, because we don't have that traditional pharma background. We have varied, you know, experiences, whether it was time spent in, you know, consumer or energy or industrial. Like, we've seen a number of businesses over the years and applied those learnings to now the pharma space. And that's why we've taken a different tact, right? Like, we launched Kysotrex as a cash only model in 2022 and went straight to patients and providers that really deal in hormone therapy, whether that's concierge med, whether that's functional, whether it's hormone therapy clinics, longevity clinics, naturally, right? So we've done things very differently because we don't have, honestly, that baggage of a traditional pharma background.
Yeah. Again, this is another reason I was just so fascinated to meet you, because I don't know if you guys are the only like FDA approved pharmaceutical type booth, like at the biohacking conferences.
Oh yeah, 100%. I think we were definitely the only FDA approved product. Yeah, It's not common, right? But we know patients. That's why I think we're truly in a hormone renaissance here, because this has been driven by patients. Why are there so many TRT clinics that are popping up, or hormone clinics popping up, anti-aging clinics, whatever you want to call them, right? They're only popping up because clearly there's a tremendous patient demand for these therapies, not the other way around.
Yeah. And it's so fascinating to me. And again, like kind of going back to the enhanced games things, I really like having more, it's hard to like step out of your biases in mind and like look at something objectively. And so it's really interesting to me why we get certain, like almost morality clauses around the substances that we put in our body for whatever reason it is. Like we have these ideas that it's okay if you're doing it for longevity, but not okay if you're doing it for this reason. Or like with the what you're doing, the oral testosterone with pharmaceuticals, we're like, oh, pharmaceuticals are okay if it's like this, but not if it's this. Like, it's just really interesting to like step out of it as much as you can and be like, why is that? Like, why do we have these ideas?
Right, right. Yeah, they just get stigmatized into these buckets. And again, like patients should have the choice. So, you know, you talk about like, again, yeah, if it's hormones or even like, you know, we get testosterone and hormones are like really adjacent to sexual health, right? And because if it's deemed sexual health, then it's often, you know, quote unquote, not covered, or it's not prioritized, right? And this happens a lot in the for the female side too, right? And it's really worse. I mean, I have a lot of our KOLs. If I you know, sort of brought them on, they would just, you know, they'll you know, light firestorms because of how lopsided it is. That, you know, again, it's easy for a guy to get Viagra, but it's really hard for a female to get a sexual health drug that may be FDA approved for them. And a lot of insurers don't cover it, which to me is akin to not covering mental health, right? Like imagine the PR, the press, if insurers stop covering SSRIs for depression, right? Because we said, okay, we don't think this is real, right? Like that would never fly. But how is it so easy to dismiss sexual health, which has a clear correlation to mental health?
Yeah, that's so fascinating. Okay. So when the actual approval process, how long was it for you?
So yeah, in terms of R&D was from 2009 to 2019, we finished the trial.
Oh my gosh, so long.
10 years of R&D there, and 10 years of a lot of money that happens there. And then, you know, you basically kind of get your filing ready for the FDA. I think we submitted in at the end of 20, if I'm not mistaken. So we were lucky we got through COVID. We didn't have any interruptions there. And then, you know, the approval process was like a year and a half.
Do you remember, is there like a moment where you get like a final approval?
Yeah, you get you get like a couple hints. They drop a couple hints along the way, you know, whether it's labeling, they might say, hey, look, here are our comments on the label. And then, you know, you're getting close. So you get some of those, but you're not exactly sure. And I'm pretty sure, you know, the email came. I must have been already at home. I must have been working from home. And, you know, email just popped up and said, hey, you know, this is your approval letter. Right? Yeah. So pretty crazy in how it unfolds. But, you know, it's a nerve-wracking process for sure, because you're dealing with the agent, you know, the FDA, and they do wield obviously a lot of power. It's very interesting because, again, not everything you agree with along the way. Sometimes they come back with questions and you got to provide your answers and scientific justification. But again, we took a very like pragmatic, practical approach to this. So, you know, there were points where we certainly challenged the FDA too. And we said, hey, look, this doesn't make sense. Like you're not looking at this right, right? And, you know, whereas most people would not want to do that, they would kind of just go along, spend more time. I mean, again, if it was a different company, might have taken a few more years to get this approved.
Wow. Yeah, that is completely wild. And how long have you been working on a potential version for women?
So women is relatively recent. It's been about a year that we've been working on this. We put together a pretty rock star female advisory board together in late last year. I think what really changed is the opening, right? The FDA had that panel on female HRT in, I think it was June or July of 2025. And again, credit to a lot of the KOL, you know, the people that were on that panel. I would call a lot of friends that I have that were on that panel. They just stood up until they were heard. That changed the landscape. This administration has changed the landscape for patients and hormone therapy. Without that, I think we would be, it would be an uphill battle.
Are the changes that have been made, are they, quote, permanent, or could they be reversed when administration changes?
I don't think there's going to be, I mean, look, anything could happen in that sense, but I don't think it's something that a new, you know, the next administration would just pick up and reverse. It's not, I mean, these are scientifically grounded decisions. They're not whims. Again, I think scientifically grounded is the best way to describe it. So I don't see why somebody would pick up and change these things. Frankly, I mean, hormone therapy is not, you know, a partisan issue, right? Like, it doesn't, your hormones don't care if you're Democratic or Republican, right? Like, I mean, this is the health of our population. And if we want to think about, like, right, like, we have an aging population, as does much of the world, and we have ballooning healthcare costs. These healthcare costs must get under control sometime in the near future, or our budgets will literally implode. So they have to start thinking about, okay, what does preventative health look like in this country? And I think hormones play a very central role in that preventative health equation.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I'm just so grateful for everything that you're doing. And so I have one last, like, very random question. With estrogen, we know there's the whole, like, estrobolome. Do you know if there's any connection with the gut microbiome and testosterone? And especially if you're taking an oral form that's, you know, going through the small intestine, like, is there any microbiome stuff happening?
So we don't see, like, or report, like, any, you know, sort of changes happening to the microbiome, but it certainly plays a role in terms of how you absorb your oral testosterone. So again, one individual to the next, you may have someone that is a super responder, so needs a very low dose and can achieve, you know, let's call it high levels, versus the next person might need the average or the highest dose to achieve the same levels. So we do see that dictated by an individual gut, but we haven't seen anything from the data showing anything, you know, to the negative side. I mean, testosterone even plays a role in, like, your beta pancreas cells, your beta cells and things like that. So ideally you should see, you know, neutral or positive effects overall with the right amounts of testosterone in your body.
Oh, and speaking to that, so the effects on other hormones and systems. So if you supplement testosterone, will that have an effect on, like, estrogen and progesterone? Like, do you need to be monitoring other things as well?
I guess it depends on male or female to a certain degree, right? On the male side, you still want to monitor estrogen, but what we've seen uniquely in oral testosterone versus injections is, because, again, you're not going super physiologic, you're not getting this excess conversion to estrogen. So even, again, this is a pre-fly some data. We had a clinician look at Kysotrex and the amount of patients that were on estrogen blockers. Prior to Kysotrex, they were on injectable testosterone. That number was 20-odd% of patients were on estrogen blockers. After switching those patients to Kysotrex, that number dropped to, like, 10%. So, because, again, you just don't have these excess levels that are converting. But so you do want to watch your estrogen levels for sure, just to understand what is happening. But what we see with clinicians, like, you want to watch out for a couple key hormones, but, like, the hormonal system is obviously, like, very complex, right? And there's a lot of substrates and so forth. It'd be very challenging to kind of keep your eye on every single downstream hormone from these kind of key ones. I think you want to focus on, you know, the main ones, and otherwise you'll go a little crazy.
Yeah, I know. Another resource for you guys. If you struggle with food sensitivities like I do, you have got to get my app, FoodSense Guide. It's a comprehensive catalog of over 300 foods for 11 potentially problematic compounds. These include things you may be reacting to, like gluten, lectins, FODMAPs, histamine, oxalates, sulfites, thiols, whether or not something is a nightshade, and so much more. It even includes autoimmune paleo AIP status. You can learn about the compounds, create your own list to share and print, and finally take charge of your food sensitivities.
It is a top Apple app, often in the top 10 for the Apple food and drinks charts. And friends, get it now because I'm going to be updating it to a subscription basis soon. So you definitely want to get grandfathered in for life at one super low price. With the subscriptions, by the way, I'm going to be implementing some pretty cool features. So I need to do subscriptions to help support that. So like I said, get it now before we change to subscriptions. You can get it at melanieavalon.com/foodsenseguide.
And then as far as like practically implementing this, so as far as like getting it in access, and also because you've made it very clear that it's for, you know, men who are low. Amy, for example, said, can middle-aged men with normal testosterone levels take it and have improvements like women do when they start HRT? So I don't know if you can even speak to or with, you know, Kysotrex specifically, but men, if men are have like normal levels, but they feel like they're not optimized, can they get optimized?
So I think, again, it depends on really where they are, right? I think if you're at the lower end of normal, like I was citing that, like the urology data saying, you know, sub 450, you could see some benefits on testosterone therapy. I think that there is a baseline number that does matter here, right? If the patient's at like 800, the likelihood of them seeing benefits on TRT is probably less likely. But then the other bit too is how symptomatic are they, right? Because you either have guys that are asymptomatic, they really don't feel anything. You have guys that don't realize that they have some of these symptoms, right? They kind of just chalk them up to aging or, you know, life, right? And then you have guys that like absolutely know something's wrong, right? So I think depending on where they are on that spectrum, that will dictate, you know, being on therapy and the results they see and sort of the satisfaction they see. But what I would say is this, is like, for guys, like being symptomatic is not the only reason to go check your testosterone levels, right? Like you may be feeling this way, you may not know it. Again, like I really wasn't symptomatic in a lot of ways. I really couldn't say anything was wrong. But when you do normalize, you know, things get better. And you're like, well, that was actually, you know, I didn't realize, right? So that's why it's so important that you do make this part of your routine blood work.
And is that where, so this is from a woman, because Crystal said, oh, I still want to hear this one. I want to get mine checked, but I have no idea where to start. So again, women, so different population, so not eligible right now for Kysotrex, but just for starting, is that where you start? You just ask your physician for a test?
Absolutely. Yeah. Ask your physician for, you know, testosterone tests. Again, female, you can have, you know, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone levels checked. If they don't know, you just keep asking where you have to. I mean, there's honestly a lot of like good at-home blood tests today too, right? So you know, these consumer lab tests are available. You can always do that and do an at-home test and, you know, get your levels yourself if your physician, if you find it challenging to get from your clinician.
Can people, so I know you have the website testosteroneproject.com. Does that have a lot of information for listeners?
So a couple things for listeners from a resource perspective. So testosteroneproject.com is actually an advocacy organization that I founded, and it's focused on descheduling testosterone, right? This should not be a controlled substance. It's focused on female testosterone, making an FDA approved option available, and then standard testing. Right? These are the things that it's focused on. So it's more of a policy organization. But from a resource perspective, we have a disease website, a disease state website that's called rethinktestosterone.com. And that has a lot of the studies and data, because there's no shortage, honestly, of studies that have been done over the last couple decades here, whether it's related to diabetes, depression, general testosterone, et cetera. So that's a good resource for patients to start.
Awesome. And then for actually getting Kysotrex, which by the way, how did you come up with the name?
So Kysotrex is two things combined. Kaisa meaning kites, and like, so you're kind of flying, and then trex, like going on trails and treks. The FDA naming process is extremely convoluted. I mean, rightfully so, for, you know, safety purposes and so forth. They don't want two drugs to sound the same. They want to make sure different languages like have, you know, appropriate sort of connotations and so forth. But yeah, like you kind of just spend all this time coming up with like 10 different names and you pressure test them and then you rank them in terms of what's likelihood to make it or get rejected. So we did all that work and KaiserTrex was at, you know, at the top, close to the top, and yeah, it got through.
I'm just super curious. Is it like a thing? Because it took me forever to get one of my trademarks. Is it a thing where you have to do like one at a time, or can you give them like...
You do have to do one at a time.
Oh gosh. So you have to really... Oh man.
You have to make sure, because then again, that could push back your approval, and you don't want that to happen by any means. So it's a crazy process.
Wow. Oh my goodness. I'm so fascinated by it. Well, thank you. Thank you for going through it. Wow. A decade. That's insane. And thank you for what you're doing. Well, with the oral supplementation of KaiserTrex, and thank you for what you're doing for hopefully the future with women. Perfect. Was there anything else you wanted to share with listeners about, you know, everything that you're doing?
Well, one thing I would say is like, well, I mean, just, this is kind of just, again, about the modalities and oral testosterone. I think something important that folks really want to start to pay attention to is something called SHBG. So SHBG is sex hormone binding globulin, and that actually binds to testosterone and makes it unusable, right? So, you know, and a lot of people have high SHBG levels. Men have higher SHBG levels as they age, could be from lifestyle, drinking, those types of things. Women, actually a lot of women have elevated SHBG levels because of birth control. Actually, you have a massive generation of females with high SHBG levels that don't come down after you stop either. So they're permanently elevated. And the reason I bring up SHBG is because it's related to free testosterone. And that is the number that really matters, right? Your total T could be fine, but if you have a high SHBG and a low free T, you're not going to be getting the effects from testosterone that you need. So what's interesting about KaiserTrex is that it uniquely lowers SHBG by 30%.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. So it really sees, like, you can see a big difference then. Like, it basically preferentially increases your free testosterone.
You feel it more.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my free T went from 7 to 28.
Wow. Do you know why?
We don't actually know this. We have not figured this out yet. But it's like a super nice benefit.
So you're essentially, you know, giving your body more of this hormone, and your body is making more of it available to the body.
Correct. So that's why it's interesting. We get a lot of like really strong patient-reported outcomes from, again, what seems like, you know, normal mid-levels, right? They're not like, that's why it's like challenging this concept of super high levels, because what really matters is your free testosterone.
And on top of that, what you mentioned earlier, you're not seeing that big of a change in the pituitary.
Pituitary. And then actually, again, independently, there have been studies that tie SHBG to longevity and telomere length, right? So lower SHBG would lead to higher telomeres.
I was so happy to meet you at the conference, and hopefully see you at another one soon. And the last question that I ask every single guest on this show, and it's just because I appreciate more and more each day the role of mindset. So what is something that you're grateful for?
It's a good question. I think honestly, it's the ability to remember like home base and where peace is for me. And that keeps me pretty grounded and grateful every day.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much. This was absolutely amazing. Hopefully see you soon. If you go to the Enhanced Games, let me know.
Yeah, no, again, we're just toying with the idea, but possibly.
Please go, because I don't know if I know anybody, because I literally like, I'm not going to know anybody if you're like walking around Vegas.
It's going to be kind of crazy. Yeah. Well, I'll definitely keep you posted. I think I have your email, right? So, but yeah, I'm sure we'll see you somewhere around. But if you have any questions, any follow-up, and like, if you want to follow up on this specifically, like re-testosterone levels for females, then just let me know.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Well, super appreciate it. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. For more information and resources, you can check out my book, What, When, Wine, as well as my supplement line, Avalon X. Please visit melanieavalon.com to learn more about today's guest, and always feel free to contact me at contact@melanieavalon.com. And always remember, you got this.